It's a good Braves win. Braves defeat the Mets 6-3. Lost last night, won today. So, Ben, here we are ahead of the trade deadline tomorrow. Atlanta is 4 games back in the NL East. They won the series, obviously, over the Mets, won 3-2. When you look at what could have been, though, I think a lot of frustration given that, I mean, you realistically could have won all 5 games. 1-0 you lost, 2-1 you lost, but you win today 6-3. You take the series from the Mets. You're 4 games back. We'll dive into that. We'll talk with Doc Herbert, Platinum Sombrero Podcast. What are the expectations ahead of the trade deadline? That's coming up tomorrow. We'll also talk about the SEC conference expansion storylines, and there are many. Could a 2-division format still work? I know we've talked about the pod system, Ben, 4 4-team divisions. Could a 2-team or a 2-division setup still work for the SEC? And we'll talk about Kyle Pitts, man. Wow. Expectations high for him in Atlanta. Falcons training camp underway, so a lot to get to. But quickly, before we wrap up the hour, it's been a grueling hour here. But Ben, today is Kevin's birthday. That's why he's off. So shout out to Kev. Happy birthday. Go give him some well wishes on social media. But 24 years old today, Ben, Kevin is. So happy birthday.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin is a youngster of the group. He keeps everything fresh, you know, between you, out of us three, BJ. But no, I mean, Kevin, I mean, hopefully he's out there having fun. Hopefully he's taking pictures, because I know that our own Christian Gonna Care are going to be checking to see if Kevin is really documenting his 24th birthday. We'll know more about that come tomorrow.
Yeah, so happy birthday to Kevin. He'll be back with us tomorrow. But, Ben, just your gut, where are the Braves here ahead of the trade deadline? You win 6-3. You've continued the trend of you win, you lose, you win, you lose. Is this team that, after taking the series from the Mets, is this a team that feels like they're a contender? Should they feel that way? Or do you think that you didn't win enough? You didn't take 4 out of 5 against the Mets. Where do you think we are here getting ready for Milwaukee this weekend?
I do think the Braves are always going to be a contender, BJ, to approving otherwise, but I think that they make the decision for Alex Anthopoulos a lot easier because of the, but, you know, once his series is over, I still think he's going to have to make a call, even if it doesn't go through. It's all about perception, right, BJ? So give the perception that we're trying to at least make a run of this thing.
And we'll dive into it when we come back. I think you're going to see something, and we'll get some insight, but I think there's going to be a move. It may not be for a superstar. It may be to shore up the bullpen. It may be to add another bat off the bench, but we'll see. Obviously, it gets weird around the trade deadline, and you've already seen some pretty big deals. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, the Braves added Jock Peterson. So we'll see if there's another move to make this afternoon, this evening, tomorrow. We'll also talk training camp with the Falcons. We will talk college football with SEC expansion. So stay with us. Tweet at us at Pigskin Radio. We'll come back with more 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. JT Daniels and the Heisman. I'm just going to throw that out there. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. Also, a really interesting recruiting story developing that we'll get to. One of the top prospects in the country might jump his senior year and enter college this fall. We'll get into that. We'll talk Kyle Pitts, and we're going to hear from Doc Herbert coming up in just a little bit. But Braves beat the Mets today. You had to have it. Had you lost today, you would have been 6 games back. That's a big difference than 4 games back. It really is. And now you're in a situation where I think you feel pretty confidently. You feel like you have momentum. You did win the series. You did win the road trip. You're coming back home. I think Milwaukee is a good team, but a team you feel like you can match up against there with the Brewers. Atlanta should feel pretty good about itself. As I mentioned at the end of last hour, Ben, you did lose 2 games. You lost 1-0 and 2-1. 2 games that you very easily could have won. And a 5-game sweep of the Mets would have been nuts, would have changed everything. But I want to say this. Shout out to Austin Riley, 21st home run today. He has been on fire. He has been absolutely extraordinary the last week. One of the hottest players in baseball is having a really good year. And Ben, I never thought I would say this, but shout out to the Braves bullpen this afternoon. You had Drew Smyly chased in the 5th inning, and Jesse Chavez, Tyler Matzik, Luke Jackson, and Will Smith did not give up a run in 4 innings. So did really nice work. Now, Smith gave up a couple of hard hit balls in the 9th, but you got it done. But how about the Braves bullpen stepping up, helping you get the win today?
It shows, BJ, man, that when the pressure shifts, these guys seem to be, you know, definitely, you know, stepping up to the plate. We always – it's always going to be a point of contention when you're talking about the Braves bullpen, because it is undeniable. You're going to have to go to that bullpen. I don't care how well the starter is pitching, but that's also kind of like a head scratcher. You know, I'm looking at Cam and Christian, and I know what Christian's saying. Where was this earlier in the season? Like, where were you guys early in the season when everybody was relatively healthy? Still had Ronald Acuña. Now you guys, because no, this is what it really is, BJ. The trade deadline, your name might be a part of that trade. I want to make sure that I'm working my way out of that trade instead of, you know, being a part of that trade when the trade deadline does come and go.
No, man, all I was sitting here thinking was, did you say point of contention or point of attention?
I said point of contention with a C. Okay. And if you go back and check it, which I know you will do, I hope I put a C in front of that A. But if I did, Christian, you know what I meant. But no, I tell you who was at attention today. That would be the bullpen. That would be Austin Riley. And I am loving what Austin Riley is doing. You know, something we talked about yesterday, BJ, is he the everyday starter at third base? I would say so. 21 home runs is a great season for an entire season, and he still got, you know, some games left. But I like the way the Braves are stepping up. That's what you're supposed to do. Your best player is out. You know, your ace was never here the whole year. Waskar Noah, he'll be back soon. You know, I just think from what I'm seeing, Alex Anthopoulos, he was probably saying, don't make me have to make a hard decision. I think that's what the Braves are doing right now, BJ. It's supposed to be, hey, we lose to the Mets, it's over with, we'll spend the rest of the season playing catch-up. But these guys are showing some fight. And dare I say, Snit never, ever gets enough credit for the culture. Alex Anthopoulos put the players together. It's up to Snit to put the culture together. I think those guys are a really, really, you know, a really, really good tandem. And the proof is in the pudding right now, BJ. You are as good as your recent game. They won their most recent. Got to give a huge shout out to the Braves for showing a lot of fight.
And here's where I am. I want to reiterate this. I've talked about this a couple of times. Okay, going into last night, my thought was, if you lose last night's game and today's game and you're six out, you're probably not doing much. If you win both games and you're two out, I think you're pretty aggressive. Given that you're four games out, that's an improvement over where you were before the start of the series. I think you make a move. And I think you make a move for a couple of reasons. You mentioned it yesterday. First and foremost, you make a move to continue the positive momentum. You know, you just won the series against the Mets. And to be fair, and I think we all agree, even the most optimistic listeners, I don't think you're going to add somebody via a trade that's going to make you the World Series favorite. But it is realistic, it is plausible that you could win this division for a fourth straight year. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. And if you add couple of bullpen pieces or maybe somebody that can play in the outfield. I mean, a catcher, who knows? You already did add a catcher with Vogt to go along with Peterson. Maybe you feel like you're right there with the Mets if you get Waskar Noah back. You know, we'll see with Darnold. But maybe you feel like you're one or two pieces away from winning the division, not winning the World Series, but winning the division. Maybe there's a bigger name out there than the guys I'm thinking about, but I think you make a move. I think the Braves have, being four games out, have kind of earned the right to be given a chance to make a run at the Mets. And I also think, just from the standpoint of the fan base, this is a team that's close enough where you have to keep the fan base excited, interested. You have to make a move. I don't know. We mentioned Joey Gallo a couple of days ago. He got traded to the Yankees. The Yankees had to give up a lot. I don't want to give up a lot, Ben. I think the farm system is really important. Makes me nervous. You know, for a while it was Drew Waters in this pitcher. That makes me a little nervous. But do they need to make a move? Yes, probably a bullpen piece, maybe a bench bat. And I think you got to make a move.
Well, BJ, they have to make a move for the situation that they put themselves in. I look at it two ways. One, I think they got to make a move because you look at the momentum that they want to keep going. Two, because they're the Braves. Good teams make moves. You saw what you mentioned Gallo and what happened with the Yankees. Well, that's what the Yankees do. The Yankees spend the most money and they'll give up the most because they're going for it every single year. They're chasing that title reputation every single year. For the Braves, if somebody told me, hey, man, Mike Soroka's gone, you know, Marcelo Zuna's not going to be with the Braves anymore, Waskar Noah, he broke his hand punching the wall, and these guys, you know, how you think the Braves are going to be looking? They're four games back. With all those – now, you take away that type of star power from the Mets. Are they four games up? Probably not. So, BJ, Alex Anthopoulos got to make a move because that's his reputation, right? And he does it the Braves way. The Braves only throw money at, you know, pitchers and third basemen these days, one-year contracts. But nobody's going to put you over the top with the Dodgers because the Dodgers, I mean, don't they got Albert Pujols? I mean, I'm just saying, the Dodgers got every freaking body. But you go make a move, BJ, because you got to show those guys in the locker room that we still care about y'all, even though Ronald Acuna Jr. is hurt. Freddie Freeman is still on the team. I just still on the team. You see what Austin Riley is doing. Who knows, BJ? You bring in a piece that has to fit the culture first and the team second. Who knows what it'll do for a still very, very, very young Braves team. I just think that, you know, they supersede the expectations of 2020. Why not try to supersede the expectations of 2021?
And guys are giving you a chance, man. You know, what's interesting is the Braves won 6-3 today, and they won that game with Drew Smyly not making it through the fifth inning and with Freddie Freeman going 0-4. You know, Freddie Freeman went 0-4, but what happened? Austin Riley picked him up. Abraham Almonte had a huge home run. Dansby Swanson, who's had some up and down moments, gave you a boost late. So guys are giving you a chance against the Mets. And I think to go back to the point about the bullpen, you know, Luke Jackson the other night gave up a big hit, came back, was very solid today. So he bounced back. Matzik and Chavez really good in the middle innings. And then you're talking about Will Smith. It was a little interesting, but went out there and got it done. But you got a chance. You got a chance. And I don't think that you're going to see the move for Chris Bryant. I know the internet, anytime somebody's not in the lineup right before the trade deadline, you know, people are looking around going, oh, my gosh, could this happen? That would surprise me. You never know, but that would surprise me. But this team is staying around. They're staying in the mix. Right now, as we speak, you're tied in second with Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia is losing to Washington. So you should be standalone in second place here in a couple of hours. And you're looking around, you feel like you have a chance. And that's all you can ask for. Big couple of series coming up, though. Not teams that you can just look at and say, oh, we feel like we're going to win the series. Milwaukee comes to Atlanta. Milwaukee, they can really hit. Christian Yelich, I mean, you're talking about a good team. And then St. Louis comes to Atlanta. Or St. Louis, excuse me, I think you play St. Louis in St. Louis. And you're talking about the pitchers. I mean, Adam Wainwright scheduled to go in that series. So if you can give yourself an extra boost, you can add a bullpen arm, if you can add somebody that can play outfield, like you said, Ben, momentum is a real thing in sports. And I think sometimes you can get it from winning series like you did. But I think if you add a piece or two, that only adds to the confidence too, right?
Absolutely. And the thing about this team, when you look at the momentum aspect of things, BJ, once again, Freddie Freeman, I look at Freddie Freeman different. He's coming off an MVP season. I think sometimes he'd be pressed too much at the plate. But when Freddie Freeman can go 0-4, who is? I mean, Ronald Acuña is your best player. I think the face of the team is Freddie Free. When he can go 0-4 and you can get help from, you know, from other guys in the lineup, that's got to make you feel good. Freddie Free had to be with the Braves in the dark ages when he was the only thing they had. You know how freeing it is for Freddie Free to know I can go out there and be myself at the plate, not have a good day at the plate, but still, you know, find a way to get the win. I'm very, very impressed with this Braves team because I just think, BJ, you look at all the odds that's up against them. It's every year – when a team wins it all or a team has success, you go, what did we have to overcome? Nobody thought that at this point in the season there would be no Ronald Acuña. Nobody thought it wouldn't be no Wash Carno or Travis d'Arnaud. It's a lot of guys, Pache, a lot of guys that you thought would be in the lineup that's not here. Dansby Mansby, becoming a fan favorite, BJ, because he comes through in the clutch. I mean, I know sometimes it's a head scratcher, but he will come through in the clutch. So, yeah, give the Braves a lot of credit. They finding a way to stay in it. And is that that's all you're really asking for. With everything they went through to be four games back, very, very impressed. But they can't just lose it all now with the momentum that they got going. It's going to come down to what Alex Anthopoulos does, but that's why they pay him. That's why he's in the front office. But Snit got a contract extension in the offseason and is earning every penny right now.
And they gave Kevin the birthday dub. Kevin will be back with us tomorrow. Happy birthday to Kevin. But we'll chat with Doc Herbert coming up in the final hour. We'll get the absolute latest on potential moves. If you're a Braves fan, who are the names you should be aware of and what might the Braves have to give up to get some pro-ready, ready-to-contribute, ready-to-lead players going up against the trade deadline tomorrow. We'll also talk some college football recruiting. The SEC expansion storylines are just crazy, just ridiculous. And we've talked a lot about 4-14 pods. What about 2-18 divisions? We'll get into that coming up. So a lot to get to. We'll come back and take three. It is 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network and ESPNCoastal.com. Heard about potential Braves trades. Also talk about Kyle Pitts at training camp. This is a guy that has big-time expectations. on him, and I think he's going to have a huge season. Ben, we'll get your perspective on Kyle and what he's getting into here, and then we'll talk about SEC expansion. What is the future of the conference going to look like? A lot of people have said, you're going to have 16 teams. Let's separate it into four-team pods, and I'm saying, I have a piece up on Southern Pigskin, could we keep the two-division format, the East and the West, and have eight teams in each and kind of keep things simple? We'll see. We'll get into that. But we will bring in Christian Gokel as it is time this afternoon, a little later than normal, to take three here on Three and Out. And Ben, I know why Christian wants to host, because the first question is about JT Daniels and the Heisman. And he just wants to be able to verbalize and say JT Daniels and the Heisman.
Way to spoil it, DJ. I mean, people come to take three so they can have some semblance of surprise, a little bit of spice to their life, and you're just burying the lead. So, yeah, I guess take one. Per Bet Online, JT Daniels is now the preseason favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, going off at 5-1 odds. My question to you, who is your favorite?
First, I want to address the initial statement about JT Daniels, because a lot of people will say, okay, he played four games last year, has not had a full preseason as being Georgia's starter. But if you look at his passer rating from a year ago, and that's my favorite stat. I know a lot of people look at yards, touchdowns. I love passer rating. And granted, he didn't have enough attempts to be officially ranked. But his passer rating last year was 178.5. That would have finished in the top 10 nationally. That would have been ninth nationally. And in the SEC, it only would have been behind Mac Jones, who just set a single-season passer rating record for college football, and Kyle Trask, who was a Heisman Trophy finalist. So JT was very effective last year, was very efficient. And Ben, I've heard you mention this. I do think there's a difference, though, when all the pressure's there. And this entire preseason, a lot of people are talking about JT Daniels, not just JT Daniels, can you be a great quarterback? But JT Daniels, can you lead Georgia to a national championship? JT Daniels, can you win a Heisman Trophy? JT Daniels, are you going to be a top 10 pick in the draft? That's a lot to deal with. So I understand the excitement and the hype around JT Daniels. I'm going to hold off on that. And I know I'm not very creative here, but I'm going to say Spencer Rattler was great, obviously, at the end of the year against Florida. Had 28 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, a 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio. I think you're going to see him only be more productive throwing the ball downfield this season. And just look at the track record. Look at the Lincoln Riley quarterbacks. I mean, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts. Two of those guys won the Heisman, and one was a Heisman runner-up. And Spencer Rattler's got the hype. Everybody knows him. So I think Spencer Rattler, but I will say this to finish it up, Ben. And I said it last year, and it was not a good take. And maybe it won't be a good take again. But keep an eye on Derek Stingley. I think LSU is going to be a lot better this year. Not only is he the best cover corner in the country, he might be the best return man in the country. And if you listen to Christian's interview with Derek from SEC Media Days, he said, look, I'm here to do whatever Coach O wants me to do. And there's a lot of rumors that he's going to play offense. If LSU gets off to a hot start, keep an eye on Derek Stingley.
Wow, I mean, JT Daniels being the Heisman, front runner, is not surprising to me when you look at everything that he did. Four games last year, his debut against Mississippi State, about as good as it get. He got the team. He got the players around him. Look at what they did in the transfer portal. I think he's gonna definitely be in the hunt. For me though, I just think that I like Derek Stingley. I like Spencer Rattler. Be on the lookout for Matt Corral. I'm telling you, second year in that Lane Kiffin offense. You know those guys going to light it up on offense. And real similar to when Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray won it, those guys were in a division to where you know they had to go out there and upset some guys and try to, get in the college football playoff. I know that it usually goes to a team, a player that's on a team in the college football playoff, but BJ, I mean, Matt Corral. I mean, the JT Daniels is the Heisman frontrunner. I think the best returning quarterback in the SEC this year, for my money, I'm going to go with Matt Corral, second year in that Lane Kiffin offense, like Derek Stingley, like Spencer Rattler, like JT. Give me Matt Corral.
All right. This is my favorite exercises to do, going back and playing the hindsight game. You guys want to look at the 2020 preseason Heisman Trophy odds?
Of course.
Because number one last year was Justin Fields, which is not a bad bet, right? Number two won Trevor Lawrence. Fine, not a bad bet. You know who number three was in 2020 preseason Heisman Trophy odds? One Jamie Newman was your third favorite in the preseason Heisman odds, followed by Spencer Rattler and Sam Ellinger. Devonta Smith, not even mentioned in the preseason Heisman odds. So, no, I'm not amped up about JT Daniels. I mean, I guess, like, people are excited about it. That's fine. I'm kind of like you, BJ. I would be happier if JT Daniels has a fairly, like, a good season, but not a great season. And Georgia's also outstanding on the ground as well. Like, I'd be happy with that. And then, also, Joe Burrow, 2019, not inside the top 20 of the Heisman Trophy odds, behind Jake Fromm and Sam Ellinger and other guys like that who are listed up there. So, if anything, it's one of those things where you don't want your player listed in the preseason Heisman odds because you don't want to be the favorite all year because people get tired of you. Am I wrong? I think I'm right.
No, you're right. No, you make a really, really good point. But see, now Christian is doing it. See what everybody used to say, and I'm not talking about Heisman, but I'm saying when it comes to my Florida Gators, right, I don't want nobody talking about them. Just give them negative press and make them play better. Christian knows that no matter what JT does now, it's, oh, man, but he only had 300, could have had 350. He only had three touchdowns, could have had five. Now they breaking down the most small little minute little details. Yep. So, yeah, that's what it is. It's like, wait a minute, man, he balled out. Yeah, but from now, it's the throw he didn't make compared to the throw he did make. That's what happened when you can't sneak up on people. But the young man, and Chris, you got to meet him at SC Media Days, he seems like he's built for this.
It is amazing, BJ, because – we were talking about D'Angelo Durham, the running back for Savannah State. He's pricked to be the preseason all-offensive player for the SEAC, but he wasn't picked to be the first-team running back. JT Daniels, not the first-team quarterback in the SEC preseason models, but picked to win the Heisman Trophy. So there's a look.
Yeah, and I think and I think like what you mentioned, you know, what's interesting about stats is if JT Daniels goes out and is 15 of 22 for 300 yards with three touchdowns, you look at that and go, if he's not a guy getting Heisman attention, you go, wow, that's a great game. That's a fantastic game. If you're JT Daniels, comma, Heisman contender, and you go out and throw for 322 yards or whatever I said and three touchdowns, you're going to go, well, why didn't he have four? Why didn't he have five? Why didn't he have 330 yards? So it changes the interpretation of the results.
It's one of those things. We let people decide things and people stink. And so, yeah, it's one of those things. All right, take two. Hypothetical here, guys. New event, the Olympics. Each country that's in the Olympics sends one athlete that has to compete in every single event. So one athlete plays basketball, one athlete plays volleyball, but they also have to do the shooting events. They also have to do the running events and do the swimming events and the high dive and badminton and all that fun stuff. Which athlete are you sending to represent the United States of America?
I mean, my first thought is LeBron. He can do it all. I mean, you're talking about an incredible athlete. I mean, even after, you know, 15 years in the league or close to 20 years in the league, it's still as dynamic and explosive and versatile as ever. But here's why else I'm going to say LeBron, all right? Because you're talking about, yeah, LeBron in the Olympics in different sports. LeBron had to win in the serververse, all right? LeBron has left kind of our world. He went to the serververse, and not only did he go to the serververse, they were down like 1,100 points. They were down like 1,200 to 100. He came back from a 1,000-point deficit, okay? And you're talking about on the other team, there's a dude that can stop time, okay? And he still found a way to win. So to me, I look at LeBron James, just recently won in the serververse. You send him to the Olympics, it's over. It's over, LeBron.
Man, I mean, you got to be able to do everything, though. Like, I get it. 6'8", 260, I get it. You got to swim. I mean, play basketball. You got to do a lot. So when I think of a guy who can do anything, like, I think he's just that athletic. I'm gonna go with Odell Beckham. I think Odell Beckham can do all that stuff. I really, really do. I think he's built for it. Like, I mean, I just think LeBron is the headliner. But for me, it came down to two guys for me. Odell or Lamar. And I think Lamar can do it all too, Lamar Jackson. So I went with Odell. I've seen Odell kick soccer balls, do all kinds. Plus, Odell can handle that smoke, you know, being overseas, not having to. So, yeah, very well traveled. I don't know how far Lamar has been you know, pass Baltimore, you know, in Louisville. I'm just saying. So give me Odell Beckham Jr.
I think Russell Westbrook, someone that you throw up there as well. Just a freak athlete. A couple other guys I thought about too. I mean, I think there's one that's already there in Simone Biles. Like, I think she could pretty much do every single event. She might get smoked in basketball and volleyball. Like, let's be fair. Because, I mean, she's like 4 foot nothing. But in other sports, I think she might do pretty well. Tyreek Hill immediately comes to mind for me, because is he small for football? Yes. Is he small for a regular person? No. And he's has like legitimate track speed. DK Metcalf comes to mind as well for me. And Myles Garrett is another guy that comes to mind, because I've seen Myles Garrett play basketball. I feel like he'd hold his own out there, especially if he was playing against other people that don't play basketball. Like, that's not their main sport. So those are some other ones that I feel like. But I think LeBron, like, he's our superhuman. You can send LeBron. Like, who wants to swim against LeBron James? Can you imagine what those strokes look like? I mean, nuts. All right. Take three is important, though. And I need you guys to really take some time and consider this, because today is a huge day. A hugely calorie dense day, I guess would be the best way to put it. And I don't know why, when they have these meetings, I need to be involved in these meetings when they pick these days. We're, to use a food term, we're sandwiching 3 days on top of each other. National Chicken Wing Day, National Lasagna Day, and National Chili Dog Day. Those days need their own weeks by themselves, number one. But for whatever reason, we're sandwiching them on each other. But if you guys can only keep two of those food items, which two are you keeping?
I mean, to me, this is pretty simple. I'm keeping the chili dog and I'm keeping the chicken wings. Because listen, lasagna, okay, I can appreciate it. I can respect it. I've had some really good lasagna. That's a lot of carbs. That's a lot of carbs. And, you know, you're talking about that's going to stay with you for a while. And it takes a while to eat. I mean, chili dog, you just go. You just go with a chili dog. It gets all over your face. It gets all over your shirt. You know, I mean, it is what it is. But a chili dog is something that I think everybody can appreciate. And then you look at the chicken wings. Didn't we have National Chicken Wing Day?
International Chicken Wing Day.
Yeah, and we were talking about the best chicken wings. You want them crispy. You want them extra crispy. You want them hot. And, I mean, that's about as good as it gets. It doesn't get any better than that. So, with all due respect to lasagna, and I like lasagna. There are all different types of lasagna. I got to go with the chili dog, the classic, and I got to go with the chicken wing, which is, you know, A+, as good as it gets.
Yeah, BJ, I hate agreeing with you. I do love lasagna too. But this is the thing about lasagna. I mean, you know, lasagna to me is like it's like Mama Trudy's brownies. There are brownies, and then there are Mama Trudy's brownies. There's gray lasagna and lasagna. The thing about the wings, I mean, they got to be fried extra crispy. But look at all the flavors. I mean, what you want? I mean, you want hot? You want mild? I mean, what you want? You want Caribbean jerk? You want mango habanero? Just throwing out these flavors to you. You can't mess it up. But when it comes to the chili dog, you want to add some cheese to it? You want to add some cheese and onions to it? I mean, I've seen people put coleslaw on top of their chili. But I'm just saying, BJ, there's some people out there that got some weird, taste buds. But I think about the chili dog is this. I mean, like you said, BJ, it's right there. It's ready. You don't got to wait. Just make, you know, it just depends on, do you like your chili with beans in it? Or do you just like the chili with the beef in it? You can't go wrong with the chili dogs when you add the cheese and all different condiments you can add to it. But them wings, but give me them wings. I want them extra, extra crispy. Listen, I know y'all want to take them in that 20 minutes, give me 21 minutes. I want them to crunch and give me my, listen, you got barbecue, hot honey barbecue, hot, mild, spicy. I mean, it's so many different flavors. So yeah, give me the chicken wings. Give me the chili dogs. Christian, I kind of see where you kind of leaning with one of them, because I think me and BJ may have just disappointed you, because you got to have the pasta.
Yeah, lasagna is definitely on there, and I got to keep chicken wings. Listen, chili dogs are great, but like maybe once a year good. Lasagna and chicken wings are like 10, 15, 20, 30 times a year good. Yeah, chili dogs, I appreciate you, but you got to go down the road. Sorry.
Well put. I respect it. There are no wrong answers. I respect it. But we all agree with the chicken wings. It doesn't get any better than that. BJ Bennett, Ben Troop here with you, Christian Gokhale. That'll do it for Take 3. We will come back. A really interesting story. Quinn Ewers, Ohio State commit, the quarterback, is potentially considering skipping his senior year and going on to Ohio State for this fall. We'll dive into that next. Three and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Be getting ready for a move or two. I think so, potentially. We'll get the latest on that. Also, we'll debate what the future of the SEC is going to look like with conference expansion. Tweet at us at Pigskin Radio. Tweet at us at Pigskin Radio. But, Ben, really interesting story. You have a young man who's the number one quarterback recruit in the country for this upcoming recruiting cycle. So he has a senior season to come this fall. His name's Quinn Ewers. He goes to South Lake Carroll in Texas. That's the same high school as Chase Daniel. He's an Ohio State commit, and he is apparently considering skipping his senior year of high school to enroll early. And you might say, wow, you know, that's a big jump from high school to the college ranks. Well, he's the number one quarterback recruit in the country. And apparently part of this is so he can begin profiting off of name, image, and likeness. In high school, cannot make money off of his own likeness, cannot monetize his brand. If he goes to Ohio State, that's obviously an option. And you would imagine being a number one quarterback recruit, a five-star that everybody already knows, you go to Ohio State, you would imagine that one of the top programs in the country, there are going to be a number of opportunities there. And this is one of the kind of new developments we've seen that maybe weren't talked about, considered right away with NIL. Do you think this is something, and we don't know yet what's going to happen with Quinn, but do you think this is something that could become more commonplace moving forward?
You would hope so. You would think so. I mean, Quinn, the thing about these big-time recruits, them graduating high school early and trying to get their college career started a lot early is something that is normal. But, BJ, I mean, Quinn is using what a lot of us wish we had, and that's leverage. I'm the number one recruit in the country. I'm going to Ohio State, so number one recruit. Going to one of the biggest brands in the country. That's still the cash cow in its division, by the way. I mean, it's still the cash cow in the Big Ten. He's looking around saying, look, okay, while I have this momentum, while I got all eyes on me, I'm the number one recruit in the 2022 class. We ain't even had the 2021 season. Now, I know his teammates going to feel bad because he got a chance to win, you know, one of those Texas State championships. But you don't always have the same momentum. I mean, being the number one recruit going into college, who knows what happens once I get there. But these names, NIL is huge. You know that these brands want to be able to jump on a young man like that early. And he's branded out in Texas, and now he's going to be branded out in Columbus. I think it's a smart move. I just think that, for me, when you talk about how smart these young people are, most of these big-time recruits coming to high school with a plan to try to get out of there earlier. But now they got even more of an incentive. So, yeah. Hey man, you know, dollars gonna always be, you know, the end all be all. And I'm happy for the young man going to Ohio State. Coach Day got another big time recruit, the number one recruit in the country. If you haven't seen him, this kid got like a bleached blonde haircut. Looks real wild. I mean, I haven't really had a chance to really watch him on tape, but obviously him being the number one recruit, BJ, he definitely got some game to him. But more power to him. I'm never ever gonna tell the young man to not go out there and get all the money he can.
Yeah, and you're talking about a quarterback recruit that is incredibly talented. Expectations already high for him, but you're talking about a senior season of high school potentially coming up. I know you signed with Florida when you were 17 years old. You were 17. You have one of those birthdays where it's right on the edge. Would this be what type of challenge would this be, even for a number one overall recruit, a five-star, to go play at a program like Ohio State without that senior year of high school? How difficult would that transition be?
It could be very difficult, but he's obviously used to being in the limelight. These quarterbacks, they go into them elite camps. We knew who Trevor Lawrence was when he was 14 years old. His game just never tailed off. I mean, we're going to see if he's built for this pressure, BJ, and different than when I came out, you don't get the fanfare. These guys are dealing with a lot of pressure, a lot of people watching every single thing they do. They embracing it. But I just think that at the end of the, can he throw the football? And he can. And he's not shying away. Think about this. Texas, I mean, Ohio State is benefiting from the fact that Texas is not in the SEC. Because if they were now, who knows if he even leaves the state. But I think it'll be I've never ever said it's going to be a smooth transition. But his senior year is going to be spent in college. So he's getting a full year of getting acclimated. Because the hardest thing about college is not necessarily the X and the O's of football. It's just getting acclimated to the college thing. Because I'm in class all day. I got responsibilities away from the field. Then I got to handle my business on the field. Then I got to make sure that I can deal with these incoming recruits every single year. So I think he'll be just fine. He's definitely got
I mean, you see what Trevor Lawrence did with the long hair? Now he's coming in with the blonde hair. So these kids are already coming in with a look, a recognizable look. But yeah, but BJ, he ain't worrying about getting acclimated to college his first year. He's worrying about financial literacy because a young man might be pulling in right at $1 million, if not more, before he even take a snap.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you think about recruiting, and this is pre-name, image, likeness. You think about recruiting, you know, so many factors go in: location, academics, you know, culture. Are you going to be somebody that's able to play right away? What's your relationship like with the coaches? Do you like the campus? I mean, so many things, countless things. How big of a factor amidst all that, with all of that, do you think name, image, likeness opportunities are going to be, not only with, hey, you know, what could I make at school X or Y, but just the timing of, do I want to, you know, try to skip my senior year? Do I want to be an early enrollee? Does it matter? Does it give me an advantage if I get there in January? How much does NIL affect just the recruiting process? And obviously, when you're a five-star, number one ranked quarterback, you probably have more options and more potential. You know, people already know you, and recruiting is as big as ever. But how does this impact kind of the overall recruiting process in your mind?
Financial incentives recruit everybody. And I think for these players, that NIL gives them a chance to just come into high school with a plan. Most guys come into high school saying, okay, do I go vocal, or do I go, you know, college prep? What am I going to do? It keeps you focused on your business, because it's one thing to tell a kid he's a brand once he represents a brand in college. It's another thing coming and saying, you're a brand right now. And there are brands that want to attach themselves to you right now. So the last thing you want, like when it comes to recruiting, the hardest thing to tell a player is, dude, you don't got the grades. That's gonna elevate guys' grades. They're going to be better students because of this, because now they're going to say every single thing about you is going to be evaluated. So if a brand is going to attach itself to you, they're going to want to know they're getting a quality student because they know you can play. I mean, BJ, it's a great recruiting tool. And when you look at the fact that, you know, what Quinn is doing, that just shows the power that these recruits have. So now if you're a top 300, which is still the most prestigious thing in high school to be a top 300, now you get to use that leverage. You got a financial incentive. So you coming out of high school saying, all right, mama, all right, daddy, this is what I'm going to look to do for us. But one thing about it is this: you better be handling your business on the field, because I do the Kevin Thomas thing. It's half you and half where you're going. So long as where you're going doesn't drop, or your game doesn't drop, you'll be fine. But I definitely think, BJ, if I'm in high school and I'm saying that I can graduate high school early and I'm still getting recruited and I'm walking in with an NIL deal, oh, I'm definitely – I mean, people thought I graduated early anyway because I graduated when I was 17. I mean, maybe I graduated in 99 before 2000, so I'll get to play against P-Dub, even though we know how they ended up with them Gators and them Seminoles that day.
BJ Bennett, Ben Troop here with you on Three and Out. And yeah, an interesting story. So keep an eye on Quinn Ewers with what happens there. The Ohio State commit may end up playing for the Buckeyes this fall. A lot to get to on the show. We'll chat with Doc Herbert, Platinum Sombrero podcast. What are the Braves thinking? And you have about, what, 18 hours or so, I guess, until the trade deadline. So do you feel like you have to make a move or two? Could there be multiple moves? Remember, you've already added a catcher in Stephen Vogt, and you've already added an outfielder in Jock Peterson. What could be next? Also, really excited to chat with you, Ben, about Kyle Pitts, man, and kind of how does he deal with these expectations? Training camp is underway in Atlanta. What type of kind of preseason does he need to have to get ready for all that's coming? And he's essentially replacing Julio in some respects. And then we'll talk about the SEC expansion stuff. Got crazy yesterday, but we'll kind of look at the future of the league, the landscape of the league. A lot to get to. Tweet at us at Pigskin Radio. We'll come back with more Three and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network, ESPNCoastal.com. Oklahoma State to the Detroit Pistons, and this is a guy that's versatile, can play kind of that point forward position. Is he a guy, Ben, Cade Cunningham, in your mind, that you can build a franchise around?
I don't know, BJ. These number one overall picks, I mean, it's hit or miss. I mean, he could potentially go out there and be, you know, like an Anthony Davis type player that can get better as the year goes on. He can be, what was it, Anthony Bennett? Well, didn't he go like number one overall out of Canada not so many years back? And I will say this, because unfortunately we compare every number one pick to do he has that LeBron type in him to like become the face and elevate. I would say no, but I mean, they've been talking about him being the number one overall pick well throughout last season. We'll see what happens, BJ. I'm always intrigued by the NBA draft because it's not the draft. It's what we're talking about with the Braves. It's the trades. There are some big-time players that are going to be switching teams. Hopefully, you know, old Trae Young that made Atlanta a lot more, a lot more appealing. But BJ, I heard some rumblings. Cam Reddish might got a nice three, but he might be on his way out of Atlanta. I'm just saying, I heard that through the trade rumors. I hope that's not true, though.
Wow, we'll have to see. And Kevin always likes to talk about the Hawks draft history. Happy birthday to Kevin, by the way, off this afternoon. But some of the Hawks mistakes. But you've also had some really good picks for Atlanta. And you mentioned Trae Young. Here's where you are. Almost made the finals, of course, this season. You're at 20 in the first round. You're at 48 in the second round. Now, maybe you're able to make a move. I know you're talking about the rumor. You know, it's crazy. You never know what's going to happen. But to me, look, you're not getting a superstar at 20. But to me, if you can get somebody that can rebound and play some defense in the post, kind of a big body, that's what I would like. That's where I would look at 20.
I mean, are those guys still around, OBJ? Don't we always talk about that? It is a luxury. When you can play with your back to the basket and you want problems – I'm saying, BJ, do they take that 20th pick and, you know, and trade it away, kind of put together like a bundle of some guys? Because I'd rather get a crafty veteran that's a big man to try to come over to the Hawks. But yeah, if you're in pick 20, that means that you were one of the better teams the year before. And I know there are no good things that come from losing, but you did lose, you know, to the NBA champs. I'm just saying.
And some really interesting prospects. Scotty Barnes out of Florida State played 1 year in Tallahassee, kind of a point forward again, who can bring that 6'7", 6'8", length. You have a lot of guys like that. Cunningham is very similar. Jalen Suggs out of Gonzaga, I think, is a really dynamic kind of combo guard who can do a couple of different things. So we'll see. All right, your gut. We're talking about the Braves making a trade in the next 12 hours, and we'll have Doc Herbert. Do the Hawks make a trade tonight?
I think the Hawks do make a trade tonight, BJ, because they are a couple of pieces away. I think you got your franchise guy to build around the Trae Young. I think Collins needs another guy to go alongside him. I mean, maybe you get a rim protector. They don't got to be a scorer. I mean, this is when that front office got to go out there and try to help old Nate McMillan get back to the NBA Finals or Eastern Conference Finals, I'm sorry.
A busy final hour. Ben Troop's going to talk Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts, the expectations off the charts. What a star already. What does he have to do to be at his best? We'll talk SEC conference expansion. Doc Herbert will join us, talk trade deadline for the Atlanta Braves. So a lot to get to. Three and out, ESPNCoastal.com. Back of the New York Mets, the trade deadline tomorrow. And Doc Herbert of the Platinum Sombrero podcast will join us in about 20 minutes here on Three and Out as we're back here with you for hour three. And Ben, a lot of people talking about Kyle Pitts, BJ Bennett, Ben Troop. Kyle Pitts, the highest drafted tight end ever, the highest rated rookie in Madden. People are already talking about Pro Bowl expectations. Could he be one of the top five or eight tight ends in the NFL right away? Atlanta traded Julio Jones. You don't do that unless, yes, you trust Calvin Ridley, but you also have high expectations for Kyle Pitts. Everybody got the first look at Pitts today at training camp. The media is everybody's wanting to talk to him. The fans love him. How does he manage all this? And you went through it, man. How do you navigate your first training camp with all eyes on you?
You got to see if he's built for the spotlight, which I think he is. Coming out of Philadelphia with Archbishop High School, then he goes down to Florida. You see how BJ, he got better each year. His first year, you know, kind of learned the position. Took it to the next level his sophomore year and kind of just, I mean, he was in a class all of his own, you know what he did, you know, last year. But I do think that, you know, when I look at the tight end position, I look at everything that's going on. He's coming to the league at the right time. I mean, I always go back to the Mike Dickens of the world, and then you talk about the Shannon Sharps and the Antonio Gates. You talk about Tony Gonzalez, right? But nobody could really take it to the next level. And here comes this guy named Gronk, and he was in a big market, and he was an incredible player. The year of Gronk, then you had Gronk, and now you got Travis Kelce, you got George Kittle. But I think the thing about it is you did tight end you. The reason why I like tight end you for Kyle Pitts is he gets to see this tight end brotherhood. Hey, man, look. We rooting for you because I think what the tight end position as a whole understands is that, dude, we need to prop up this unicorn, as they call Kyle Pitts. He's already high drafted tight end in the NFL history, so he can't hide, BJ. He got drafted higher than you know, most quarterbacks. And Julio Jones is out of town because of him. I just care about, can he handle the – forget what the public is going to say. Matty Ice is going to make sure he's where he's supposed to be, doing what he's supposed to do. I go back to this. Roddy White did not get drafted when Matty Ice did. He got drafted with Vic in them. He wasn't the same player with Vic than he was with Matty Ice. Julio was always a good player because he had Matty Ice. So Kyle Pitts, he could get the big head, but Matty Ice will say, look, man, I had Tony Gonzalez, so you chasing him. But I do think, BJ, he's built for this because now he's already got guys talking trash to him. You saw what Cameron Jordan told him. Look, man, he kind of lied in the you-know-what. Listen, as long as he detached, he can go out and do it. But if he in front of me, I'm detaching from his body. I love the trash talk. BJ, I'm going to say this, and I know I probably shouldn't, but I'm not saying he's LeBron James. LeBron James has a tattoo on his back called the Chosen One. I think if the tight end position was ever going to have a, quote, chosen one or golden child, this Kyle Pitts in Atlanta, the highest drafted tight end ever, you know what he's built to do. Now, you got to go out there and do it. BJ, I mean, unfortunately for him, there will be no maturing process. He got to come out the gate ready because – I want to see how many games it's going to take for them to stop preparing him to Julio, stop preparing him to Julio. But Kyle Pitts is built for this. I mean, 6'5", 6'6", 245 pounds, can run a 4'4", the longest wingspan in NFL history, ran a 4'4", made it look effortless. I think it's going to be a great offense, but I got to see it, BJ, because the one thing about it is, if you're a defender, if you go back to that Georgia game and he got hit, and he got knocked out of the game, don't think that they ain't going to be trying to do that because the defense always knows that we can get the best players off the field, we got a better chance of winning. But I'm excited to see him play. He's built for this, BJ, and I just think that he got the charisma and the game to match. We'll see, BJ, because now everybody will be watching. Number 94 in New Orleans, Mr. Cameron Jordan said, come on down, Mr. Kyle Pitts. Let's see if you are who they say you are.
And look, Pitts is already a star and had, you know, an incredible career, obviously, at Florida. For a lot of people, I know you don't love comparisons, especially for rookies right away, but a lot of people look at him and say, Darren Waller, athletic, can get out wide, can make plays on the perimeter. Of course, training camp is a learning experience for every rookie, but how is he going to adjust? Of course, you do it in the SEC, you're playing against pro guys a lot, but now you're in the league. How does he find success being kind of two tight ends in one? Like you mentioned, there are going to be times where he's lined up right next to the tackle and he's going to have to block or he's going to have to run his routes while, you know, being matched up with a defensive end off the line of scrimmage. There are going to be times where he's out wide and is literally a wide receiver and he might be covered by corners, certainly safeties, and he has the skill set to do it. He has the savvy to do it. He did it in the SEC, but in the NFL, what's going to be the biggest key for him to be both the traditional tight end and the new age tight end all in one?
He's got to want to be both. He's not going to want to be that one trick pony. I mean, people don't talk about this enough. I think George Kittle might be the best all around tight end. Travis Kelce can block. I mean, and people only know him for what he does receiving the football. Travis Kelce doesn't come off the field. If Travis Kelce isn't on the field because the defense is on the field, Kyle Pitts has to want to block. I'm not saying he got to be a great blocker, but I didn't understand at the tight end how much better my receiving game is when I can block, because that means that, okay, the defense can't adjust in. Well, if you know every time he comes to the game, they're going to throw it. Well, give me nickel. Give me dime. Let me adjust. But if I got my hand in the dirt and I can catch the ball from a real tight end's lineup and not flexing me out or detaching me, but BJ, the thing about the detachment, though, is not everybody can do that. See, when they say detach, they mean 5 yards off the ball in the slot. When they say detach, when I played with the Titans, they will say twins tight open. I used to be – Eric Kennedy was handling the line. I'm out wide as a wide receiver. But the only way I'm going to get the ball is if the safety come out there or a linebacker come out there. Quarterback comes out there, they're not throwing me the ball. But Kyle Pitts, Jalen Ramsey will go out there on him. And they're going to see, because the thing you can't coach with Kyle Pitts, he's always 6'6", all the 6'5", 6'6". Got the longest wingspan, got like a 37, 38-inch vertical. BJ, he's going to have to earn it, but when he goes up to the OC and says, look, I'm a tight end first, I'm a weapon second, because I don't care how good of a player he is, he's not going to have 20 catches a game It's what can he do with limited opportunity, and do he want that smoke with his hand to the ground? George Kittle is the best all-around tight end because when you watch him block, it looks like he's catching the ball. He'll say, run the ball again, and he's one-on-one with defensive end. So, yes, Kyle Pitts is a little light, you know, because he's 2'4" to 6'6". But BJ, for me, is if he wants to be a true, in a sense, true tight end with his hand in the dirt, with everything else he can do detached, that's only going to make him even more dangerous and an even better player for the entirety of the team.
I want to see if you agree here, because a lot of people, and it's natural, we all do it, look at players and try to project numbers. So I think he's going to have, you know, 50 catches for 800 yards or whatever it is. We all go through it, and it's kind of the fantasy footballization of football. As you always look at what the numbers might be, could be. For me, I'm not so much focused on how many catches he has, because understand this, Kyle Pitts is going to be in an offense with Matt Ryan, where Matt Ryan has Calvin Ridley, has Russell Gage. I think you're going to see multiple tight ends used, multiple running backs used in the passing game. You're going to spread the ball around. So Kyle Pitts, you know, he's not going to have 100 catches necessarily. I do think he's going to stretch the field. I do think he's going to be a tight end that averages more yards per catch than a lot of tight ends. But for me, I'm not so much focused on the receptions or the yards. It's when do those plays come? And third down is always a tight end down, but in the red zone. Because when you think about Atlanta, and you had struggles with Julio Jones here. When you think about Atlanta, one of their offensive weaknesses has been, hey, they can move up and down. They can get to the 15, 10-yard line, then what? And that is a multi-dynamic problem. The offensive line struggled. You haven't been great at running the ball. But I think when you drafted Kyle Pitts, you drafted him to be the number one target in the red zone. And to me, Kyle Pitts was brought to Atlanta to catch touchdown passes. To catch touchdown passes for Matt Ryan. And look, it's training camp. We're going through the basics. We're getting ready for the season. But to me, I ultimately think his impact on the team is what he does in the red zone. Do you think that's fair?
Absolutely. It has to be. You can't have a guy that's that athletic, that's tall, that's that gifted. And when he get in the red zone, he's a decoy. Now, there's nothing wrong with being a decoy, because the one thing that people didn't talk about with Julio is if they're doubling Julio, that means everybody else is one-on-one, which means you're going to get more opportunities. But now Calvin Ridley is going to be your number one. You talk about Gage and those guys. If you're a Kyle Pitts, that's the good thing about being a tight end. Okay, do I put him out wide? Do I put him in tight? But you got to be licking your chops if you're the OC, because you're saying, man, we could do a lot of stuff with this dude. And BJ, the thing about Kyle Pitts too, though, the red zone is a 20-yard – the red zone is a 10-yard in. But once you get 20 yards in, the guy is very, very dangerous. So I think that for me, I want to see third down conversions, moving the chains, being a momentum guy, making plays in the run game. And when you get in the red zone, how creative can you be? Kind of like the New England Patriots way of doing things for tight ends. The reason why it's hard to game plan against the New England Titans when they had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, they're doing something with them different every single week. So, yeah, I think it's going to be great. I think the main thing about Kyle is he knows he's going to be a focal point. But am I a focal point because I went fourth overall? Or am I a focal point because of my game? I mean, we're going to see when them live bullets come. But, BJ, I mean, I don't see him not being a factor, because if you dedicate two guys to him, that means really engaged, getting one-on-one. He's going to have – but I will say this. If he does have double coverage, throw it up to him anyway, because I want to see it. I want to see if you work the money, work the time. He's the highest paid tight end in NFL history as a rookie. He got to go out there and earn the money. But, yes, BJ, if you saw it, I'm not – listen, I love Kyle Trask. He ain't mad at the ice. I'm just saying, and he was able to make some nice plays with him. How fast can he build trust with Matty Ice? Because once he does that, Matty Ice going to throw it to him regardless, because I've seen him doing it in practice all the time. But BJ, it should be a fun offense this year. I know this is off topic, but if they can get that run game going, that's going to make life so much easier for Kyle Pitts and all the receivers.
Awesome insight from Ben Troop talking about Kyle Pitts, and all eyes on Kyle Pitts at a training camp in Atlanta. You talk about the excitement around Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne in Jacksonville. I think you got almost as much there with Kyle Pitts in Atlanta. We'll come back. Trade deadline tomorrow. Braves won the series at New York. Won today 6-3. They're four games out. What does that mean? Do you feel like you need to make one move? Do you feel like you need to make two moves? For all the talk, might Atlanta not make a move? We'll see. Doc Herbert will join us next. 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network, ESPN Coastal.com. winning record on the road trip, getting ready this weekend now for the Milwaukee Brewers coming to Atlanta. And this is a team that is within reach in the NL East. We have to see kind of what that means over the next couple of weeks. But could the team have a new addition or two moving forward as the trade deadline is tomorrow? Well, this now will talk about that from the Platinum Sombrero Podcast. Doc Herbert, Doc, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I am marvelous. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for coming on. And Atlanta wins the series against New York. You probably could have won all five games, honestly, but you're four games back. How do you see this team, and what do you think the tenor is right now, the tone, getting ready for the trade deadline?
You know, this last little stretch here, this nine-game stretch against Philadelphia and New York, it was supposed to tell us everything that we could possibly want to know about this team. And it didn't tell us anything about it. It's the same thing. They went 5-4. They won the series. You know, they already thought that they were supposed to buy, but they've alternated wins and losses every game since the All-Star break. You know, they're 8-7. That's good. You know, the bad news is they're not able to string together any momentum. But the good news is they're only losing one at a time. So, I mean, they're still treading water. They went into the Mets' house, and you're right, they probably could have beaten them in all five of those games. But that just says that we're right here at the trade deadline. They got to prioritize either a bat or a bullpen arm, preferably both, to kind of take them to the next stage. I think the team thinks that they can win, but not in its current form. I think that's pretty clear to everybody on the roster that they just need some help, and that's it. And I think that everybody who's on the roster would tell you that if you get them one or two more guys, then they can charge ahead.
And Doc, I mean, I think about what you just said. When you look at the fact you said you didn't really learn that much about this Braves team, because they'll win one, lose one, win one, lose one. How do you, you know, what do you attest, you know, this momentum that they seem to be having? Because when you look at everything they've had to deal with, no Acuña, obviously no Soroka, Waskar, Noah coming back. I mean, you know, you look at the Marcell Ozuna situation. For this team to still even be in contention when losing all those guys, it's got to be something to say for Alex Anthopoulos to have to make a move, even if it's not going to put them over the top, but at least to give the perception that, look, man, I still believe in your guys, even if Ronald Acuña is not in the lineup anymore.
I mean, look, this team should be 12 games out by now, just based on the luck. You know, not having Acuña, Soroka, Ozuna, Darno, only having Waskar and Noah for the first 7 weeks of the season. I mean, the amount of things that have happened to this team, we should be so far out, but we're not. You know, and that's the crazy thing about it. So now it's like, okay, well, while we're still here, you know, we've been treading water. We haven't drowned yet. So, you know, we're not dead yet. So let's step it up and let's go for it. You know, you never know. Sometimes in this game is really tricky and finicky. You know, luck does even out sometimes. You look at what happened to Freddie Freeman in the early part of the season, right? He couldn't buy a break. And now everything is dropping for him. You know, it's like all of the bad stuff from the early part of the season has kind of evened out for him a little bit. So I think this team could possibly have a similar thing to where maybe we get some good luck in the next little bit, you know?
Doc Herbert here with us on 3 and Out. So the trade deadline's coming up. You know, the rumors are always there, and fans always have their sights set on, you know, the big names, the huge names. Who are a couple of guys that you think Atlanta might really be involved in talks regarding? And ultimately, what do you think happens? Are we talking about one move? Are we talking about two moves? Could there be a scenario where the Braves don't do anything? Kind of give us a scouting report leading up until tomorrow.
Depending on how much you believe what you read, then the Braves at one point were among the leaders for Joey Gallo before the Yankees stepped up their trade offer. Now, to me, that is it's too bad that they weren't able to get the deal done, but it does say they are looking to be aggressive if it's the right guy. Alex Anthopoulos, you know, he watches every game too. He knows exactly what's going on with the team. He knows that they need a bat. They need preferably an arm too. He tends to do his due diligence on the big guys, but we haven't ever seen him really pull the trigger on like a giant move like we thought he was going to when he became the GM. So you don't necessarily have to make a giant splash, but you do need to do something that's going to shake it up a little bit. So I had initially said, if you get a couple of guys that aren't stars, like Eduardo Escobar, who has since been traded to the Brewers, Andrew Chafin, who has since been traded to the Athletics, you know, you get guys of that tier, but you get a couple of them to plug the holes and also cut the low-hanging fruit off the bottom of the roster. Even though those specific guys are no longer available, that tier of guys still exists. And I don't think, yeah, you see the Padres going out and getting, it looks like they're getting Max Scherzer, and the Yankees got Joey Gallo. Those are really good moves. But you don't necessarily have to shoot the moon on this. You just need to get some new blood. You have to get the right guys. And Alex really tends to prioritize fit. But just because he was going after somebody like Gallo doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to take the next best or try and go get a Trevor Story type guy. But we have been waiting for him to do this for a long time, that big trader Alex move. So, you know, maybe he does. Maybe he does pull the trigger for like a Craig Kimbrel type. You know, wouldn't that be something to bring him back to him? You want to look at a fit and like a good story, good narrative type. He will add something. But, you know, last year he added Tommy Malone and called it a day as well. Well, we saw how that turned out. So there's actually going to be a little bit of money to play with, I think, now that fans are back in the stands. They're getting some revenue kickdowns from the Battery. So I would be more optimistic than pessimistic over the next 24 hours.
And, Doc, even sticking with the way Alex Anthopoulos goes about, you know, the trades and bringing guys to this franchise, to this ball club, the chemistry for the Braves team is a little bit different than you look at other teams because, yes, they do have star power. I'm not saying that. But how much of that factors into what Alex Anthopoulos does? Because bigger than bringing a guy into an incredible ball club, you got to bring a guy that's not going to mess up this chemistry and kind of go with the culture that the Braves have built up since he's been in the front office.
No doubt. And the locker room has been such a crucial element of those really good teams the past couple of years. You know, don't have anything nice to say about Marcelo Ozuna anymore, but when he was the catalyst, it was apparent how good of a time the team was having. When Josh Donaldson was here, it was apparent how good of a time the team was having. Alex has to be careful about who he brings in because if he gets a rental player, right? Let's say he gets Chris Bryant, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. That would almost be, as far as star power goes, that might be a good play to have because, you know, Ronald is coming back next year. Ozzy will still be here next year. Ideally, Freddie will still be here next year. And if you get too many Chiefs and not enough Indians, then it becomes an incomplete team, right? You need somebody who's going to be a really good role player. If you get somebody who is going to be around next year, that's where you've got to be really, really careful. So, and that's another component of what I was just saying about trying to get the fit and make sure that you have the exact right guy to fit into that locker room too, because sometimes it's something just as simple as a guy running around the bases, you know, holding a fake umbrella, or a guy coming in the dugout wielding like a pink pirate sword. You know, you never know what's going to trigger a team. Clearly having somebody wearing a panda head at the end of the dugout isn't really working, but, you know, not everything's going to work.
Doc Herbert, the Platinum Sombrero Podcast, here with us talking Braves, the trade deadline coming up. Wanted to ask you about a couple of guys. Austin Riley had another home run today. I think three more RBI. You're talking about, a 290 stat line average with 21 home runs now. How impressive has he been? And is it fair to say that, you know, there were some questions for a while that he is clearly the guy at third base for now and the future?
No question about it. He's been one of my favorite stories this entire year. You know, you go back to preseason, there were fans that were ready to ship him off just because he was inconsistent. And even into the season, when he was not getting a lot of hard contact, there was no power in his game, and he just really stuck with his approach. And now you see what he's doing. I mean, he's one of the best third basemen in the National League. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, there's people that would be interested in trading for a third baseman and maybe moving Riley to the outfield, which it's an option. But I think he's really comfortable over there now because he knows that the team stuck with him through thick and thin. They let him figure it out, which is some leeway they didn't give to a lot of prospects. You look at Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson and say, like, man, if this guy had a little bit more time to work through his struggles, then maybe he could have figured something out. And they did that with Riley. They just left him over there and said, you know, we have enough faith in you to figure this out. And now you see the fruits of it. And it's not just that he's hitting home runs. You know, you look at the last nine games, you know, the Braves do not go 5-4 over the past nine games without Austin Riley doing what he did. And if there's anything Braves third basemen love to do, it's to go into New York and just ruin Mets fans' days.
And Dr. Goddard's really pitched well his last two outings, you know, against the start tonight. Tuca Toussaint, a guy that, in my opinion, is taking advantage of the fact that he's, you know, getting to see how well he plays in the starting lineup. Talk about the way he's been pitching and just making a name for himself in a season to where a lot of guys have been banged up.
Yeah, Tuki is one of those guys that his arsenal, has it's just tantalizing. You see him throw that curveball. It's just different, you know, in the same way that when you can listen to Ronald Acuna taking batting practice and you know it's him. It's just the way that the sound, it's just different off of his bat, right? It's the same thing with Tukey's curveball. There are a million curveballs, but there's something about Tukey's that's just different. And he seems so in control. It's, and granted, it's two starts. You know, I think we talked about him last year about, like, is this it? Is he finally breaking out? And it does seem a little different this time. He seems to be not rattled when things might not be going the way that he wants them to go. He's got a start coming up this weekend against Milwaukee. I am so curious to see if he can string it together. That's been the thing about these Braves prospects, the pitchers, that you'll get a great start out of somebody like Bryce Wilson, and then the next time out, he'll lay an egg. Or you'll get a great start out of Kyle Wright, and the next time out, he'll lay an egg. And with Tuki, it's been the same thing, but now he's just, everything's working. He's got the split change incorporated too. I mean, you give him a good, viable third pitch to play off that fastball and curveball, because he can throw gas, and you know about the curveball. And that in itself, that's somebody who could transition into being a successful reliever. But as somebody who's still got the stuff to start, getting that third pitch and being able to just stay poised on the mound, the sky's the limit for this guy. And we really needed him to step in. You look at the starting pitching recently, it's been the younger guys that have actually been doing okay. Like, Charlie's start was kind of blah. Drew's start was kind of blah. But Tukey, his two starts, and Muller the last couple times out, just really good stuff.
Doc Herbert, the Platinum Sombrero Podcast, our guest here on 3 and Out. Trade deadline coming up. Doc, thanks so much for the insight.
Hey, of course. We'll talk soon, guys.
And the Braves may be looking to add a bat, maybe looking to add an arm. And you heard Doc mention a couple of names there, Ben. And look, we've heard this rumored a couple of times, but Craig Kimbrell. I mean, listen, you know, you could use some help in the bullpen. How much fun would that be to bring back one of the, you know, Braves' great closers, bring Craig Kimbrell back to Atlanta?
BJ, I mean, if we bring back Craig Kimbrell on Kevin's birthday, we'll never ever hear the end of it, right? Kevin's not here. You start getting good news. But I will say this. I mean, BJ, man, Tuca Toussaint. I mean, outside of the fact that, you know, I can't talk to Papa B to get my scout report on any of these pitches, I've been very, very impressed with Tuca Toussaint, BJ. Whenever these pitches go out, you get another guy to step up. Tuca has been playing well. Can they keep the momentum going? But BJ, Craig Kimbrell, I'm trying to say, is Kevin's birthday, the lucky charm? We'll see, but hey. We'll see what Alex Anthopoulos does. I just think that the Braves are making it very, very hard for him. No, yes, he's going to make a decision, but because of how well they plan, does that decision change, BJ? Because you got to prove it. We're still going to go for it, even if Ronald Acuna Jr. won't be back till next year.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. A lot of rumors. Stay up to date on Twitter. Follow ESPN Coastal, Pigskin Radio, and we'll see what happens over the next, 12, 16 hours with the trade deadline. We'll come back. The SEC is changing. We know that. Oklahoma and Texas are coming, okay? What's the format going to look like? Are we going to have four mini divisions? Are we going to have no divisions? Could we have two? We'll talk about that. 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Posted 8 minutes ago from the SEC. The SEC presidents and chancellors voted unanimously Thursday to extend membership invitations to the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas join the SEC effective July 1, 2025.
BJ.
The competition, yes.
I'm very curious to get Ben's thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, for folks listening on radio who aren't watching the stream, Ben is not here. There he is. He's back. He's back for the breaking news. And
wait, hold on. Ben, what do you think the breaking news is?
I would say the breaking news would be Oklahoma, Texas have decided to come on over to the SEC.
Close. That's a good guess.
I mean, kind of. I'm not rereading the whole tweet, but yes. Apparently, effective July 1, 2025, there's been a unanimous vote to extend membership invites to Oklahoma and Texas. So it's amazing. Like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, this was on nobody's radar. Now, not only is it happening, like it's officially happening once the invitations are accepted. And we'll see about the timeline stuff. I would imagine that's going to be another story, trying to figure out when, how, and maybe trying to make this happen before 2025. But yes, all the SEC brass voted, and everybody votes to extend the invite. Oklahoma and Texas going to be part of the SEC, SEC, SEC.
BJ, think about Texas A&M for a second. Now, you and I both know they didn't want no part of this. But didn't I tell you, perception drives reality. They don't want to be the one saying, because different than the college football playoff, they're going to show who was not in favor of it. But apply the SEC and Greg Sankey. I think what people fail to realize is 2020, all eyes was on all these commissioners. The one commissioner who wasn't going back and forth with his ADs, who had full cooperation of all 14 teams, who seems to be an incredible ambassador for the SEC, always speaking highly of it, was Greg Sankey. He was the one that said we're gonna let all the medical professionals kind of lead us. So we're gonna have the latest start. But now, BJ, Mark Emmert, the commissioner of the NCAA. I mean, where is this role in all of this? Because biggest, I know, BJ, you always looking down the road. I mean, you are. Hindsight is 2020, but I mean, you know, foresight is another, you know, total different thing. I just think that when you look at what's going on now, Oklahoma, Texas, brand equity, you got the flagship schools in both of these states. How much pressure, not the ACC, because I think they're going to be fine. Not even necessarily the Big Ten or the Pac-12. How much more pressure? Because, BJ, something we ain't talking about. Remember yesterday, I mean, you was like, did somebody send out a cease and desist letter? The Big 12 doesn't like the fact that, you know, they're kind of getting bullied, which I just think these are business moves. But, BJ, it's funny. 2019, amateurism is going this way. 2020, it's taking a nosedive. 2021, I mean, it's gone. I mean, Mr. Quinn, out of you know, high school in Texas, I'm going to skip my senior year. Texas, Oklahoma, they're going over to the SEC. Bryce Young, I mean, he's making more money than certain head coaches in college football. I'm looking forward to see how these SEC media days going to be down the line, BJ. But Texas and Oklahoma, them boys going to be coming over. And dare I say, all y'all, old Vince Young and the Texas Longhorns, it's going to be good for them boys to see how good that football really is in the great state of Texas.
And tomorrow on the show, we'll chat with one of your former teammates with the Titans, Bo Scaife, who won a national championship at Texas. We'll get his thoughts on the Longhorns ultimately potentially coming over to the SEC. But this is huge news. We've talked about it all week. Two of the biggest programs in college sports and college football. And you think about rivalries, right? Okay, in the SEC, you already got the Iron Bowl, the Egg Bowl, Georgia, Florida. I mean, you're talking about three of the biggest rivalries. Alabama, Tennessee versus everybody, pretty much. Now you're talking about the Red River Showdown as well. I mean, so for all the rivalries in the SEC, once this becomes finalized, and we'll see what year, now you have Texas and Oklahoma as well.
Does the Red River rivalry have to move to Atlanta because they're in the SEC? BJ, I'm saying, I already know if you're a Texas Oklahoma fan, y'all already taking them from us. I've heard that y'all taking them from. We ain't took nobody from y'all. But I'm saying, BJ, Oklahoma, Texas, them boys got to use to seeing how it is in old Mercedes-Benz. Come on over here so y'all can bring all the Texas and Longhorn fans through. I'm not going to do the – I'm not – listen, what the hooks up, hooks down, I don't play with that stuff from Texas fans. They don't play with that, but they're going to have to deal with some rowdy SEC fans now.
All right, it's going down. So the question is, what does the SEC look like moving forward? And I have a story up on southernpigskin.com. I encourage you to go check it out. A lot of talk about, what are we going to do? Do we have no divisions? Do we just have kind of a 16-team blob out there? Do we have four team mini divisions, which we've talked about? My worry, if you do that, is you lose some of the rivalries. So what I looked at the idea of doing is we have two divisions now, the East and West. It's pretty simple. The winner of the East, the winner of the West, they play for the SEC championship. Could we maintain that and just have eight teams each instead of seven? Now, I made some moves. I made some moves, but I think this would keep the simplicity in place for when your division, you go to Atlanta, and I think it would also protect the rivalries and keep them as annual games on the schedule. Now take a deep breath and stay with me here, but this is what I have the SEC East looking like. Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. Now, you have the familiarity there. You also have the geographical, you know, everybody's close. A lot of people have talked about Auburn being in the SEC East for a long time. Well, you're not bringing Auburn over without Alabama. That's got to be, they have to be division partners. And I know people are going, oh, my God, a division with, you know, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, and Georgia. Well, that's the reality. When you're talking about adding all these big superpowers, that's the reality. So Alabama, Auburn is kept as an in-division rivalry. Florida, Georgia is still an in-division rivalry. Tennessee versus Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, all an in-division rivalry. Then on the other side, the SEC West, you have Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State, Missouri, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Texas, and Texas A&M. Again, the geographical location, the proximity, everybody's pretty close. You're keeping the rivalries intact. Oklahoma and Texas, Texas and Texas A&M, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, Arkansas and LSU. And folks may be listening and going, my heavens, a division with, you know, good grief. Oklahoma, Texas, Texas A&M, and LSU? Yes, that's the reality of adding superpowers to your league. I think this way you keep teams within proximity. You keep rivalries, and a lot of people may say, oh, man, well, that's too one-sided. I don't think it is, and I went and looked. The eight teams from this theoretical SEC East last year won 45. The 45 games last year. The eight teams from the theoretical SEC West won 47 last year, so pretty close. And if you use last season's final polls, both this new East and West would have had three top 20 teams. Alabama, Florida, and Georgia in the, quote, East, and Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Texas in the, quote, West. So I think it balances out pretty good. I think it's something to think about, and you can read the full story, southernpigskin.com.
BJ, I love it. I will say this. I think that no matter what, I like your East and West, even with the quad system, I think no matter what, you still got to preserve those rivalries. So no matter what side, because and this is the thing, too. While Texas and Oklahoma is obviously the Red River, who is going to become their rival? Like, who's going to be the team they're going to be going back and forth with? Because this is what we don't talk about. I know you got the Florida Georgia. I know you got Alabama Auburn. I know you got the Ole Miss Mississippi State. Well, Florida plays LSU. They got a nice little rivalry. Georgia plays Auburn. They got a nice little rivalry. You know, LSU Texas A&M has become a nice little rivalry at the end of the year. Who's going to become that familiar foe for Texas? I know people say, well, Texas A&M. You know, but I think that that's the thing is you added two incredible brands. And BJ, if you're Greg Sankey, can you lose? Because this is the thing. If he goes whenever they start, 2023, we're going to go east-west. 2024, we're going to go north-south, east-west. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have some of the best brand of football going on. And I will say this. Whatever the SEC does, the other conferences got to do. They just got to do it. So they say if they go quads, you know, if there still is a Big 12 at that point, Big 10, Pac-12, ACC go quads. And I just think, BJ, we most of the time when it comes to the shifting of the powers in college football, we don't get to see it. This is the only SEC me and you grown to see. But now we get to say, hey, man, I remember when the SEC got Texas and Oklahoma. So I think it's going to be great. I just think that for me and you, we get caught up in the tradition of things, the pageantry of things. Well, BJ, you got to develop new ones, got to develop new rivals, you know. And I think that adding Oklahoma and Texas is about as big of a brand of football, you know, even though one of them is the cash cow while the other one is the big brand of Texas that you can add. So Vanderbilt, Arkansas, good luck. It's going to be real rough. But Tennessee better find a way, BJ, to get right real quick, because now they're going to be judged on the new SEC. Everybody got a chance to kind of have a clean slate. Does Tennessee come out of the dark age and start playing a nice brand of football now?
And the breaking news, unanimously, the offers have been extended to Texas and Oklahoma. So a couple of days ago, this was just kind of a talking point. Now it's happening. And assuming they're accepted and you're talking about an effective date of 2025, I don't know that that's the reality. We'll see how some of this goes and if Texas and Oklahoma try to move over to the SEC before then. I know we've gotten a lot of speculation from a couple of different writers on that. But yes, Texas and Oklahoma officially and unanimously invited to the SEC. That's not all the breaking news. Breaking news in the NBA ahead of the draft. We'll hit that next here on Three and Out. Join the SEC effective 2025, I believe July 1st of 2025. Breaking news that may be close to happening. Multiple reports now, Ben, about Russell Westbrook being traded or being involved in serious trade talks. I don't think it's done yet per reports, but looks like possibly, potentially, Russell Westbrook to the Lakers.
I just noticed somewhere, you know, producer Jim, BJ is going crazy right now. Couldn't be happier for a guy in Russell Westbrook who, just like CP3, you just want him to be able to have a chance to win one. If anybody can control Russ, I think it's LeBron. I mean, that's yet to be seen. But, yes, our reports are showing that Russell Westbrook might be headed back to Los Angeles.
And you're going to see trades. Again, the draft tonight, Cade Cunningham's going number one overall to Detroit. That's already been announced. But you're talking about Atlanta at pick 20 in the first round. You have to see. It's very hard to project out who's going to be available at 20. But the Atlanta Hawks are at 20 and then have a second-round pick as well. But in your mind, if I mean, Russell Westbrook, a healthy Anthony Davis, I mean, is that – that's a super team with LeBron, right?
Yep, I mean, y'all are talking all that trash. You're going to see if he's going to have to deal with them boys in the finals if they do make it back to the finals. But, yes, that definitely makes them a super team. We'll see if it happens. But the Lakers, Magic Johnson no longer with the Lakers, but Showtime might be headed back to the Lakers.
I want to thank Doc Herbert for joining us on the show today. We'll chat with Bo Skay, former star tight end for the Texas Longhorns. He will join us tomorrow. Ben was your tight end teammate with Tennessee, as we'll talk Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. We'll see you tomorrow, Three and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network, ESPNCoastal.com.